is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome in to hour two of the Lombardi Line on VSiN and DraftKings Network. Got a great hour ahead here on the program. NFL heavy as always, but we do have some college football best bets coming up in about a half an hour. VSiN's own writer, Aaron Moore, is going to join the program. But for now, it is myself, Stormy Bonantoni, alongside former NFL executive Michael Lombardi, as we start this hour discussing all things Monday Night Football. So for the you can't trust Kirk Cousins in primetime crowd, Daniel Jones said, hold my beer, last night and beyond, Michael. He has now put himself in a situation where he's 1-12 straight up in his career in primetime games, 0-7 on Monday Night Football specifically. He was sacked 10 times yesterday by Seattle, a number of turnovers, including a pick six that was just ugly as can be. What were some of your biggest takeaways from Daniel Jones' performance last night?
Well, I think the word is out on how the Giants have to play. The Giants have no real skill that scares you with Barkley out. Yeah. Their offensive line is a mess, especially with Andrew Thomas not at left tackle. The rest of the line's problematic. And everybody knows that Daniel Jones will react to the rush. And when you force him to speed up his game, when you force him to have to make quicker decisions, when he can't sit there in the pocket and kind of react to it, then all of a sudden the things start to fall apart. And that's your giant team. Last year, they did a great job of managing it. They were able to run the football more effectively last year than they are this year, partly because Barkley's not there. But also, they were able to protect the football. You know, last year, we always talked about Daniel Jones fumbling and how he didn't have the ability to hold on to the ball for most of his career. But Brian Daboll fixed that in that one season. This year, it's back to being a problem again. So we knew the Giants, and I kept saying this all offseason, to go from good to great, it takes a lot of steps. You just don't go from good to great. You got to be good for a while, and then you knock your way through. And this team, to me, when they paid Daniel Jones $40 million and they ate up that kind of cash and cap room, they were telling us they're better than they really are, and I never saw it.
Mm-hmm. And I said it earlier today, I think this is more evidentiary support of why you shouldn't pay somebody based on 1 year of them doing something good when all of the other indicators and factors and numbers and things that you've seen with your own eyes are contrary to what you've seen in that 1 year sample size. And I feel like that's what we have with Daniel Jones, who is the most pressured quarterback, by the way, in the NFL right now, pressured a career high 25 times last night. I mentioned the 10 sacks, but even in the rare instances, Michael, where he did have a clean pocket, it's like he felt phantom pressure and was not where he needed to be. A lot of things I feel like are frustrating if you're somebody who is a Giants fan or a backer in this spot, because you and TG both were saying yesterday here on the program, like, this is a do or die type of a game. This is a game that the Giants need to win. And they got stomped 24-3 by an injury riddled Seattle team.
Right. I mean, they fly back from San Francisco. You know, that was going to be a hard game for them to play. So they spent the next 11 days getting ready for Seattle, knowing Seattle's going on a bye. And this is their season, because you know you got to go to Miami afterwards and you got to get back on track. You have to play your best football. And up until this point, Seattle hasn't been a defense that you thought, oh, you know, they're so good in the passing game and pass defense. We won't be able to move the ball on them. Well, I thought that. I thought they could throw the ball on Seattle. The problem was I thought wrong. They couldn't. And Jones got sacked. He got pressured for 10 sacks. One went to Paris Campbell. Mm-hmm. But the reality of it is they were really always struggling to make an explosive play. Can't get the ball to Waller. They have outside receivers that don't make plays. Paris Campbell's their second leading receiver on the team. He averages 4.4 yards per catch. That's not per rush. That's per catch. So they throw the ball, they check the ball down, and naturally they play from behind. And when you play from behind like they do, I think they've been outscored 30-3 in the first quarter, it's hard to get on track, especially when you can't pass protect, which they can't.
30-3 in the first quarter, 77-9 in the first half, outscored 64-3 at home and 94-15 in primetime in front of all of America's eyes. It has been an ugly start for this New York Giants team. And you referenced it a moment ago. They've got Miami coming up at the Dolphins, where they are getting 11 points in that spot. They follow it up with another primetime game on Sunday Night Football in Buffalo against the Bills, where on that look ahead, I see 12.5 as that number. It's not going to get any easier for the Giants moving forward. When you see that number with Miami, though, staring at you, is like we talked about it a little bit in hour one. How are the Giants going to be able to put up points, and how are they going to be able to stop this Miami Dolphins team that can't seem to not put up points? Even when they were really, really right. Even when they were against a really, really good defense last week, they put up 20.
Yeah, like I can't imagine that Vic Fangio won't have a better game plan for Daniel Jones than he did for Josh Allen, right? And even if Barkley plays, you know, and Andrew Thomas plays at left tackle, you know, that certainly would help the Giants. But can they score 20 points? I think it's going to be hard. Let's say they score 21. Then the question becomes, do you think the Miami Dolphins will score less than 30 points? They scored 24 against New England, who has a better defense than the Giants. They scored 20 against Buffalo, who has a better defense than the Giants. So if they score 30, you know, 31, you know, and the Giants score 21, there's a 10-point. Maybe you can cover there. But I think I would be nervous all day on that game.
So
especially if it goes to, I would think, and this is going to be 2 touchdowns, actually. I was shocked it's only 11. I think it'll go to 12 before we're done.
Yeah, and like I said, that look ahead on Buffalo is at 12 or more based on where you can look at it. But I think we both agree that Miami's going to be able to get theirs on offense. And I think there's something to losing the way that they did last week at Buffalo after getting all of the high praise that they had for the 70-point historic performance. They lose by 28 last week. They probably have some extra motivation themselves at home playing a team that they know they can stomp and that they know they can take advantage of. So when I look at that total at 49.5, I think of that more in the framework of how many points realistically do we think Miami can score in this spot? What does your head tell you from that standpoint?
I think if the Giants hold them to under 30, if they hold them to 34 under, it's a win.
But okay, so that's what I'm saying. That's the lower end then for Miami, you think?
Yeah, I think if they can get them to, I think 34, if you're Don Martindale and you said, we can hold this team to 30, let's say 31, we got a chance. The question is, can you score? Can you score 32? I don't think you can.
I mean, there's just no. I feel bad. I feel bad for the Giants right now, Michael, because they're in a spot where they really should be 0-4. I know that from a survivor standpoint, I was the happiest girl in the land at the time when the Giants came back to beat the Cardinals. But think about how down bad they were in the first half in that spot. So I have no trust, no confidence in this Giants team. And I think it's going to be an ugly loss for them again next week in Miami and beyond. How about the Seattle side of things? I mentioned all of the injuries that they had. They came in down 4 starters. They left down 7 with other bodies leaving, including, unfortunately, by the way, like I know that there was a lot of excitement about Jamal Adams coming back, his much anticipated return, only last 9 plays before he had to go out with the concussion evaluation. But this team, you know, it's been hard fought through 4 weeks for them, but a 3-game winning streak, they get a bye to get a little bit healthy. And then when they come out of the bye, they're at Cincinnati against a Bengals team that's extremely vulnerable.
Yeah, I mean, I think Seattle, that was an incredible win for them. When you go into the game and you don't have both starting tackles, which they knew they weren't going to have, so they practiced that. But then during the course of the game, you lose 2 guards, and now you're down to your 7th and 8th linemen on the road. I mean, that's pretty impressive. And I think what Pete has been excited about, if you talk to Pete and you hear what he says, having Dramond Jones, who they got from Denver, as his 3 technique, he feels finally he has a 3 technique that can make plays. And because of that, his defense is better. And with Witherspoon at corner and Wooten at corner, Woolen at corner, I mean, they can cover man-to-man and they have no problem. And it's clear that we can call Jamal Adams a safety. We can do that. That's nice to do, but he's not. He's a linebacker. Now, he's a physical in-the-box player, but he's a linebacker. And when they get him back, it gives them more speed on the second level. And Wagner allows them to get set up. And Brooks has always been a tackling machine. So they have improved off defensively. There's no question. That was the weak spot of their team. And when they get these tackles back, the offense will get back in gear. Because I thought Geno showed his toughness last night, coming back with the ankle, coming in and playing, you know, kind of fighting through the injury and making sure he was back on the field for his team.
Michael, the San Francisco 49ers in the NFC West are obviously a big favorite in the division based on what they've done. They look to be a contender for a Super Bowl this year. But who's the second best team in the NFC West right now?
I think it's still Seattle, because the Rams are so well coached. And Matthew Stafford is playing lights out, like lights out. He's playing really good. 16-year veteran playing as good as he has. However, that being said, in this Colt game, he got hit. And I said it when I was watching live. I wrote it in my notes. He's hurt. And it came out after the game, he hurt his hip. And McVay's on record as saying he thinks he's going to play. That's good. But it's hard to play with a bad hip. We see Joe Burrow trying to play with a bad calf. That's not working out. And if he gets hit like he did at the fourth quarter of the Colt game, if he gets hit by Philly in this game, he's not going to last the season. Mm-hmm. He's just not. And when he goes, when Stafford goes, it's over for the Rams. That's it. They're done.
Yeah,
because we
saw that last year.
He's been sensational.
Exactly. We saw that last year. And I mean, the odds indicate as much as well. You see that on your screen. Seattle plus 550 in the division. The Rams 13-1, Cardinals 70-1. But I asked the question because I think largely the Rams have exceeded expectations, and Seattle's obviously got some flaws of their own. So we're going to step aside here.
And I thought.
Go ahead.
Well, I thought Stafford wasn't going to come back healthy. I think that's part of it too, but he is.
Yep. We got to keep that in mind. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get the daily email recapping all of the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You also get unlimited access to the VSiN.com/picks page, where you can sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. Check on the top VSiN experts leaderboard as well to view betting records, profit, and ROI. See which VSiN expert has the hot hand. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro today. Sign up for only $19 for your first month at VSiN.com/subscribe. And you know, there are plenty of picks out there from our experts in the NFL awards markets as well, which is where we're going to kick things off here. Michael, talk some MVP, Offensive Rookie of the Year, and other awards up as right now, because there have been a number of movers and shakers in these markets since the season started. And let's start at the very top, especially given today you have an article out at VSiN.com on quarterbacks specifically. And we know that the MVP is a quarterback award. You say all the time, let's just call it the quarterback award because of the way that they deliver things.
Why won't we just do it?
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, look, the most valuable player in the league right now is Tyreek Hill. But if we want to call it the whatever you want to call it, you can call it. I mean, you can do it. It's going to be a quarterback, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's just the way that it's been historically. A wide receiver, unfortunately, has never won it before. Tyreek Hill right now, we see 75-1 on the odds board. He was 50-1 before this past week when he got bottled up by the Bills defense. But the favorite, speaking of the Buffalo Bills, is their quarterback, Josh Allen, who has been bet down from plus 850 prior to week 4 to the favorite at plus 380. And he, it seems, Michael, since that opening week where he had 4 turnovers against the Jets and we were all questioning what in the world is going on with Josh Allen, and the turnover numbers are absurd, to 3 straight games now where he has played at that MVP caliber level, and coming off a win over Miami where he had 5 total touchdowns and just 4 incompletions. Is he the rightful favorite for you in this market?
I think it's no doubt. He has finally figured out that if he plays point guard, he's dynamic. You know, he doesn't have to be the leading scorer on the team. He doesn't have to be the guy who makes all the plays. He can just be Magic Johnson, because he makes everybody better. His accuracy has been unbelievable. He's made some incredible throws, and he has played within the offense. He hasn't tried to take the offense on his shoulders. their ability to run the ball, their ability to be in 12 personnel, everything that they've done right this offseason, Cincinnati's done wrong. Cincinnati stayed status quo with their 11 personnel. People catch up to it. No run game. Hard to get any power in your offense. Hard to get that going. Last year they had Sammy Perrine. They don't have him. This year they, you know, now it's all mixing. Buffalo added more weapons, drafted Kincaid. Now they can be a 12 team. And it's real. And finally, after week one, when he tried to be the Josh Allen of, I'll just carry the team, and he throws the interceptions, he said, wait a minute, I'm going to be a point guard. And he's been great. Mm-hmm. And if he stays like this, if he continues to play like this, they're going to be hard to beat. They're going to be hard to beat. They finally have a Western New York weather-wise offense.
So Josh Allen plus 380, Tua and Patrick Mahomes in the 5-1 plus 550 range, followed by last year's runner up Jalen Hurts 7-1, your guy Lamar Jackson 11-1, Justin Herbert 18-1. How much credence should Christian McCaffrey, the first non-quarterback on the board at 20-1, get given what he has done so far this season? And a big day this past weekend also broke Jerry Rice's franchise record for most consecutive games with a touchdown. He, like, in so many ways, makes that offense go in his dynamic, Michael. But again, it's a quarterback award. So is it worth the bet at 20-1?
I don't think it is. But here's what I would say, why I think we don't understand the most valuable player award and why we just constantly look at numbers. And I think it's really two players. When McCaffrey left Carolina to go to San Francisco, it changed their offense. His versatility gave Kyle Shanahan something that he never really had. And because of that versatility, this offense became difficult, even more difficult to stop. Tyreek Hill, it doesn't matter how many catches he has. His presence on the field is most valuable because he shifts the field. Everybody else benefits because people are trying to take him away. And the same goes with McCaffrey. You have to look beyond the numbers to understand who's the most valuable player. But we don't do that. We just have to constantly cling to the numbers. Well, this guy's this. No. McCaffrey shifts to change them completely. You ask any defensive coordinator who faces the 49ers on a regular basis, they were easier to play until McCaffrey got there. Because now all of a sudden things changed and the matchups changed. Same thing down in Miami. Hill changes everything for Tua. And those guys, to me, are the most valuable type players.
So if I, like, let's say I give you $100 to use in this market, however you see fit, how would you divide it up?
If you gave me how much?
100. C-note.
I would bet 50 on Allen. I would bet 75 on Allen, and I take 25 on McCaffrey.
Okay.
I mean, they're not going to give it. They're not going to give it to Tyreek Hill. They're going to give it to Tua. Even though, as Tony Romo said and I said, it's really Hill is the reason. They lose Hill. They can lose Waddle. Hill's the reason that thing goes. Now, when they lose Tua, you know, if they put Mike White in there, it's probably not going to be as good, but they probably can survive for a while. But if they lose Hill, that's going to shut everything down.
Let's go to Offensive Rookie of the Year. We talked about CJ Stroud a little bit earlier in hour one and how our opinion of him has so dramatically changed based on what we were seeing in the preseason compared to the way that he has performed in actual NFL live bullets type action. He is the favorite now at plus 175, down from 15-1. Puka Nacua, Rams wide receiver, plus 425, the second option, followed by the preseason favorite Bijan Robinson at plus 450. The next quarterback on the board, Colts QB Anthony Richardson at plus 550.
Yeah, I mean, I think right now it's going to go to, I thought perhaps Bryce Young could get this because I thought he was more ready to play than Stroud, and that's been proven wrong. Mm-hmm. Stroud has played really well, no interceptions in three games. In four games, leading his team to two wins, played well in the opening game against Baltimore, just couldn't get the ball in the end zone, had three drives over 10 plays, but couldn't get the ball into the end zone. So I think it's his right now. Nacua, if Stafford gets hurt, those numbers are going to go down. Cup's coming back perhaps this week, you know, which is going to, what I don't think people appreciate, and I'm not taking anything away from the young receiver, but it's how good McVay is in getting these guys open with stacks and stems and motions. And even against man, the pick plays he runs, it's so good. That there's a, if I said to you and you didn't know if I changed the numbers, you would think he was Cup.
Yeah.
Right? You would think he was Cup. But that's the beauty of McVay. He understands how to create the matchups. He understands how to attack the defense. And he's got a quarterback who understands how to get the ball out in rhythm, who's great when he's healthy. The problem is, we know it's going to be hard for him to stay healthy.
Yeah, that hip that we just referenced a little bit ago. I know for Offensive Rookie of the Year, kind of similarly to MVP, this is an award that they want to give to a quarterback, and it's probably easier for them to make a name for themselves in this area. But I wonder if when Cooper Kupp comes back, if that actually frees up Puka even more. Like, let's say Matt Stafford stays healthy. Let's say Cooper Kupp comes out there, and that allows, because you have to defend Cooper Kupp as well, that allows Nacua to have some more of those chunk plays. I wonder if that could be somebody worth buying in on. But at this number, I don't know if I want to, because he was 150-1 in the preseason, Michael. There were players who had shorter odds than him that are on practice squads that aren't even playing. Like, it's ridiculous what he has done.
Well, but we talked about it all summer. They were hot on him, but he gets hurt quite a bit. You know, he's a physical guy. He goes inside. He's been taking a beating now. Tell you what, he's got great hands. You covered him in college. He's got great hands. He's got great eye-hand coordination. He's willing to go inside and take a beating, but you're worried about him sustaining that as well. And you're worried about if Stafford falls apart and they have to play the backup, it's not Stetson Bennett because he's on NFI, you know, then it's over.
Running back wise, who would you like more, Bijan Robinson or Devon Achane for Miami? He's been great early.
I think Achane would be great. I think Achane would be the guy right now because they're winning. You're always going to go to the team that's winning. It's a big game for Atlanta this week against Houston. They got to win this one.
No question. He's somebody that surprised me. Like, that was a name that was not on my radar at all. But I think that's kind of the beauty of this market. And yes, I mean, based on what we were just talking about with quarterbacks and how this is an award that you want to give to one, given the numbers that they're able to put up. If CJ Stroud and the Texans are winning more games, it's going to make a whole lot of sense for him to win that award. But seeing names and players that nobody had heard of or expected to have on the odds board at this point, I think is really cool with some of those names that people didn't expect. We have to take a step away here for a moment, but when we return, we're going to flip the page from the NFL to a little college football action. VSiN.com writer Aaron Moore is going to join us. There is one coach in college football right now that it is becoming more and more clear on a weekly basis is keenly aware of the spread, how that can impact us and his players. Next with Aaron.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Don't forget, on DraftKings Sportsbook this season, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. Download the app and use the promo code VEGAS, that's V-E-G-A-S, when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. We're rolling along here on the Lombardi Line alongside former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonantoni, excited to welcome in great friend of the show like we do every Tuesday, Aaron Moore, VSiN.com writer, sports media professor at Pub Relation Prof on X. Welcome in, Aaron. How are we doing today?
Very good, Stormy. Thanks for having me. Appreciate
good.
It.
Yes, appreciate you joining us. And I know we've talked about this subject before in the past, but it certainly bears repeating after this weekend and what happened with Penn State, because they say good teams win, great teams cover. And it appears James Franklin is very motivated to be a great team based on some of the late game antics that we have seen now for another week.
And it's interesting you say great teams cover, because this is nothing new. Teams running up the score at the end of the game, making sure they get a good cosmetic victory. This is nothing new. Barry Switzer did this well before there was legalized gambling. But I do think it's interesting with what is happening with Penn State. And it's now the second time for James Franklin. And last week against Northwestern, they're up. Very easily up. They're 34-13. It's a 27-point spread. The backup quarterback comes in, runs a little bit of a razzle-dazzle, makes it look like a fake run, and then throws a touchdown pass. They cover the spread. All good. It looks good for the backup. The backup quarterback gets a touchdown, the backup receivers. It looks all good. But at the same time, it's lining up too much with a team, or in this case, a coach, clearly knowing the spread, clearly dictating possessions and what he's doing based on the spread. And I do think it's interesting that it's James Franklin coaching Penn State, that he's come in now to this year with very high expectations, a rabid fan base that wants him to win. And 8 or 9 wins is just not good enough for James Franklin. So I think he's checking boxes. And in this case, one of those boxes is covering the spread.
No question. I think he doesn't want any doubt. And when he looks at his point differential, he wants as many points to be able to go there and sell his program in case he stubs his toe and he can make the case. I want to go to a game. You know, Notre Dame, fortunate. 4th and 19, I think they were able to convert against Duke. Big emotional win, got that. Now they go and play a team that I don't think a lot of people, me included, would have thought that Louisville's undefeated. And yet here they are. Is this a letdown game for Notre Dame potentially?
I mean, absolutely. After what happened with the Duke game last week is a letdown potential. But I don't think it's going to happen to Notre Dame, Michael. And yes, Louisville is 5-0. Yes, Jeff Brohm has done a great job getting them atop the standing. But after 5 weeks, we can do a little comparative shopping here. And who are those 5 victories Louisville has got? NC State last week was an ugly win. Boston College, Indiana, Murray State, Georgia Tech. Not the greatest wins. They do have 5 wins. Jeff Brohm has done a great job. But this Notre Dame team, just think about if those last 2 minutes of that Ohio State game go differently. Notre Dame might be the 4th or 5th best team in the country. They're ranked way high, even higher than they are now. The expectations would be even higher. It's the same team. I still think this is a spread under a touchdown. You can get Notre Dame. Yes, it's a letdown, but it's still Notre Dame against a team that's 5-0. And I think that 5-0, Michael, is a little sketchy.
From a 1 6.5 point spread to another, we have the game of the week, I would say, in the Red River rivalry, Texas hosting, or I guess technically it's in Dallas, Oklahoma, as it always is. And 2 5-0 teams going head to head. But another situation where Oklahoma is 5-0, but they haven't been tested really by anybody. Texas, we know, has the big win against Alabama a couple weeks back. But this is an interesting situation here. I'm curious how you evaluate things with these two and Quinn Ewers with another opportunity to potentially climb up those Heisman odds boards with a statement.
Stormy, I think these two games mirror each other. Oklahoma, 5-0. Wow, look at what a great job is happening over there. But let's, once again, after 5 weeks, and I do a lot of the handicapping based on now who are they playing and basically how do those statistics and performance carry over. Iowa State, Cincinnati, Tulsa, SMU, Arkansas State. I don't think any of those teams are making the final 4. I don't think any of those teams really get any national attention. So you've got a 5-0 team against another team that is beating a very good Kansas team. Baylor, Wyoming, Alabama, and a very good Rice team. Texas is the better team here. And when I look at it, Stormy, we're talking about Dylan Gabriel and Quinn Ewers. It's interesting. Dylan Gabriel has the better statistics of the two. Ewers is favored a little bit higher on the board for the Heisman. But Dylan Gabriel is almost 1,600 yards passing. He's done a better job performance-wise than Ewers. Ewers just has that team that's got a little bit higher in the rankings, a little higher expectations and much better wins. Ultimately, I look at this and I think the difference will be in favor of Texas. Texas has Jonathan Brooks. They have the better running back. They're going to be able to keep possession a little bit longer. It's called the Red Rivalry Shootout for a reason. They play high score games. But Texas has a running back that can control the clock. Texas has a better defense. And I think if you're looking at it just from the standpoint of these two teams and their record, I like the team with the better record based on the better performance against better teams.
How about Missouri? Now, when you watch Missouri, they make the long field goal, win a game. I mean, Luther Burden has been sensational. Brady Cook was injured, came back and played, and they obviously took over Vanderbilt last week and won. But LSU, I thought their defense was going to be better since they had so many guys returning from last year. That didn't happen. So do you think this is an overplay game? And do you give Missouri any chance to cover the six?
Now, let's talk about what you said earlier, Michael, a letdown game. I think this is going to be a letdown for LSU after what happened last week in Ole Miss. They're going to Missouri, and this is basically the Missouri season has been set up for this game. That Missouri's been at home for every game, except they played in St. Louis and at Vanderbilt last week. That's, you know, pretty easy game right there. So this game is setting up for Missouri. You're getting almost a touchdown. The Eli Drinkwitz effect in Missouri, I think, is going unnoticed. This is pretty interesting. We're talking about Texas and Oklahoma, but this LSU-Missouri game maybe is just as big because this is the game that might put Missouri in that national conversation. Certainly not playoffs, but not the pushover they used to be. So I do like Missouri getting 6.5.
LSU has not been the team that I know I thought they would be. My two of the teams that I had in my college football playoff were LSU and Penn State as kind of my outliers. And one of those has looked a lot better than the other to this point. Let's keep it moving. How about in the Mountain West this week, Wyoming and Fresno State going head to head. The Bulldogs are 5-0. Wyoming's lone loss to that number four Texas team where they were competitive and in it down to the end of the game before Texas ultimately ended up pulling away in that spot. The spread was 6.5. I see you took that with the Pokes at the time. It's now 5.5. Would you still like that number?
I still like that number, Stormy. And it's, once again, I'm going to keep on a trend here. A 5-0 Fresno win, a 5-0 Fresno record. They've won 14 straight games. Jeff Tedford, awesome job. But let's look at those five wins. Nevada, Kent State, Arizona State, Eastern Washington, and Purdue. Purdue, Arizona State, bigger conferences. They beat them, but those aren't the power teams right there. So you've got Wyoming, another team, like I'd say Missouri, that this is their season is being based around this game. I think it's just too much respect for Fresno and their record that Wyoming is 4-0 this year. This is their third straight home game. So keep that in mind, that they've been there in Laramie waiting for this game, Fresno getting the wins, getting the attention. I think this is a tough ask for Fresno to go into Wyoming. I like Wyoming with the points, and I took a little taste with them on the money line as well. I think this could be one of the bigger upsets in college football this upcoming weekend.
Any other game you want to give us here, last 60 seconds?
Well, from the standpoint, too, the other one is UCF in Kansas. I do like Kansas, even though Jalen Daniels has an injury. I still think this is a good opportunity for Kansas at home. You have UCF. They're another team coming off of a horrible loss last week. I think this is a pretty good opportunity to get Kansas, even if Daniels is injured. The backup who went in into last week's game against Texas really didn't get too many reps during the week. So there's this idea Daniels is not going to play. So the backup is going to get this week of work. I like Kansas in this situation. Kansas is a good team and their stock is down off of that Texas loss. But put it in perspective, they didn't have their best player. Their backup quarterback wasn't prepared. They lost to a better team. I still think it's a good opportunity for Kansas with UCF going into the Big 12. And just think about, once again, they're going up a weight.
Great stuff as always, Aaron. Really appreciate you.
Thanks, Aaron.
Thank you very much. Good luck to you guys.
I like that theme, though, fading these, I don't want to call them paper tiger 5-0 teams, but the better team facing more competition versus another 5-0 team that hasn't had to play the same. And Michael, I really liked the way you said Missouri. It was like Missouri, like you were a local. A good flavor there.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The NHL season is almost here and our hockey betting experts are ready for the action. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and you'll get our all-new NHL betting guide featuring previews for all 32 teams. We've got future bets, awards picks, and season-long props, first period betting strategies, Steve Mackinnon's power ratings, plus best bet articles 5 days a week as soon as the season gets underway. This guide is a must-have with key insights and data. Whether you're an avid hockey bettor or somebody new to the sport, give yourself an edge this season. Get the VSiN NHL betting guide by becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber today at VSiN.com/subscribe. And not that anyone cares. And yes, I am a homer when it comes to the Vegas Golden Knights, but the defending Stanley Cup champions getting no respect despite bringing back essentially their entire roster with the exception of Riley Smith. So I'm just going to put that out there. Welcome back to the Lombardi Line.
When does the season start, Stormy? When do they officially defend their crown?
Less than 2 weeks, baby. We're getting this bad boy underway.
So I got it.
See, everybody, like, you got the MLB playoffs getting started. Hockey's right here. NFL and college football are in full swing. This is what I was waiting for in July when I wanted to die every day and we had nothing to talk about. Like, this is the exciting time of year on the calendar. So I'm here for it. And we just had a great conversation with our guy, Aaron Moore, talking about college football and some of his favorite plays coming up this week. Gave us a good pro tip, I think, for the day. As we throw this up there, free daily betting tips, by the way, at vsin.com. We do these every single day, every show. But talking about how not all 5-0 teams, these undefeated teams, are created equal. You've got to look at who they have played deeply before you make your evaluation. And there were a few examples, but you know I'm a Mountain West girl, Michael. And his example being that Fresno State-Wyoming game where Wyoming has been tested. They did go toe-to-toe with Texas. And Fresno State, for as good as Jeff Tedford is as a coach and how they have looked against lesser than competition, it is lesser than competition. And Wyoming's getting points in Laramie at 72-20. So I like that thought process a lot that Aaron gave us as we approach games this weekend.
Yeah, and you know, the last part of your sentence is right. You play in Laramie, that's not easy. You know, that's why I asked him about the Louisville game, because Brohm's a really good coach, and Brohm knows Notre Dame as well as anybody, having coached at Purdue. You know, and I know they're 5-0, but what his point was well taken. They're not a real 5-0 because it's not like he's playing with a lot of players that perhaps are not to the level it's going to need to beat Notre Dame. So I think the records and level of comp in college are so important.
Absolutely. Again, VSiN pro tips available at VSiN.com, searchable by sport and by show. And Michael, before we welcomed Aaron on, and I didn't want to steer the wheel to the NBA when we had a college football guest on, but you were seeing some tweets about Mr. James Harden showing up at camp. How'd that make you feel?
Well, Woj is reporting that he's going to show up on Thursday, and then they're going to fly back to play Boston in a preseason game. I mean, they're in Colorado State at Fort Collins. Not sure why, but I guess, you know, they want to spend Josh Harris's money. Well, not why not?
Speaking of altitude, you know, we were just talking about Laramie. There you go.
Yeah, get a little altitude. It's only 3 days, though. How much can you get out of that? But supposedly, and this isn't according to me, this is according to Woj, that Harden will report on Thursday.
Well,
it just makes me so happy, Stormy. The Sixers over under total is 48. If you want one tip from me, you can cash it right now. They're going under.
We got two pro tips for the people at home today. So what's the deal with this, though? I thought that he was holding out and not showing up to camp because he was big mad that he wasn't traded to the Clippers yet.
Well, here's the problem. He wants to go to the Clippers. The Clippers are saying, we'll take him, but we're not giving you anything for him. He only wants to play here. He has no value in the market. So he's trying to dictate without any value. And so, like, it's really somewhat embarrassing to him. He's acting as if he's a megastar. You know, it would be like the backup quarterback threatening to not come to work today because, you know, he just doesn't feel like the meal in the lunchroom is good enough. Like, seriously. Like, you have no leverage. You had to opt into the $36 million because nobody else was going to pay you that. And there's no market for you. Meanwhile, Morey is hanging on to, we have to get value back. I mean, Morey knows he's not getting value back for him, so he's just trying to get him back. I'm aggressively working trades. How do you aggressively work trades when you can't, when nobody wants to give you anything back for the player other than just matching salaries? It's kind of comical. It's really a kind of a way to where some people misevaluate their market value.
In this case, clearly
Harden has.
Yeah, where do the 76ers stack up for you in terms of the Eastern Conference right now? I know it's preseason. They've got a lot to figure out, but
they couldn't beat Milwaukee. They've never been able to beat Boston. You know, so like, where are they? I mean, they're, you know, where do you want to put them?
Because the odds makers have them third. And so I was just curious if that's how you see it, as a two horse race and 76ers are there.
I mean, you think Miami's not better than them?
Well, after what I saw from Jimmy Butler, I like, why does Jimmy Butler do this for training camp picture days? That was like the most uncomfortable thing I have ever viewed in my life, looking at his media day photo shoot and his, what do you call himself? Like emo Jimmy. This is his emotional state. Is that just because Dame ended up going to the Bucks? So he's emo now.
I mean, like, seriously, what was that? That was like weird, right?
Well, last year he did the braids, right, for his pictures, which it's just, I get why he's doing it. Like, it definitely draws attention, and it's hilarious that throughout the entire season he's going to look one way, but his pictures in all of the TNT broadcasts and all the ESPN stuff is going to have him looking crazy.
Amazing.
Not for me. Not for me. Last couple minutes here, Michael. Before we welcomed in Aaron, we were talking about NFL Rookie of the Year. And when we were in that commercial break, you said there was a number in that odds board that drew your attention. What was it for the people at home?
Well, I think Anthony Richardson, what was he at 12? What was he?
Plus 550.
I think he was at plus 550. Look, you know, he missed the game. Last week he was, you know, for the first couple quarters, it wasn't great. But once he got it going now, once he started throwing the ball in the seams and he started throwing it up the field. I think his average per attempt throws was over 12 yards. And he was trying to get it down the field, and he was way more accurate than I thought. And their offense, which doesn't have a lot of great skill around it, was able to make some plays. If they get in the running game with Zach Wilson, Zach Moss has been very good. So look, I was a believer in Richardson when he was when I first saw him. Was not a believer with him at Florida, but now after watching what Steichen has done with him and his improvement in terms of his accuracy, this is Cam Newton with a better arsenal in the passing game. That's what I see him. I see him being the guy that could really be the best of all of them, because he's got the size, he's got the speed, he's got that Cam Newton-like quality. Now he's got to stay healthy. But this guy's special. This guy is special. And he's hard to tackle. And as Josh Allen took steps forward, you know, they got him Stephon Diggs. I think this Colt team will. Now, they've got to be better on defense. I mean, last week it was comical. I mean, they didn't attack Stafford until the fourth quarter. They let the Rams run the football down their throat, which makes you very difficult to believe that the Titans won't move the ball against Gus Bradley's defense. Gus Bradley likes to play one front, sit in that, and let a good offensive coordinator game plan against him, which drives you crazy. Because the week before, he actually attacked Baltimore. So it's really challenging to watch the Colts play defense. And then Tennessee, look, we know they're limited in terms of their offensive weaponry. You know, Henry finally got going, but they pushed Cincinnati around. I mean, that was a game made to order for Tennessee. Made to order, because they could run the ball. And Burrow couldn't throw the football. Think about this, Stormy. We talk about Burrow's injuries, right? I mean, Burrow is 52% accurate on 3rd and 4 to 6. He should be 70% accurate there, right? He should be 70% accurate there. And on 1st and 10 throws, he's at 53% accuracy. 1st and 10's the easiest down to throw the football on. And he's not been able to make any plays. His quarterback rating on 1st and 10 is 58.6%. That's horrible. So you keep asking, should he be playing? If somebody's paying attention to the numbers, the answer is no.
Yeah. He's got two games with 165 yards passing or less. It's just, again, I said it earlier, but I feel like, especially if he's risking re-injury and given the spot that they're at in the season at 1-3, that they are doing him as a player and their team a disservice continuing to play him in this spot. And I get that Jake Browning is not your answer, but I don't know if what you're doing with Joe Burrow is either. That's going to do it for us today. Awesome, awesome conversation today, Michael, especially all of the breakdown on Monday Night Football. If anybody missed any of it, make sure you download the Lombardi Line in podcast form wherever you get your podcasts. That's a wrap. Thanks for joining us. Make sure you keep it locked right here on VSiN or DraftKings Network. Pablo Torre coming up on DK and the Sharp Money Crew next on VSiN.
Thank you.